I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. My guest is grammar guru Emmy Favilla, the former copy chief at BuzzFeed and the author of A World Without Whom, the essential guide to language in the BuzzFeed age. Today, Emmy has do's and don'ts for grammar, punctuation, and writing in the age of texting and tweeting and posting and shading. If traditional rules of writing are being broken in emails, tweets, and the like, and everybody's doing it, is it okay for, well, everybody to do it? The rules of writing are certainly less strict than they were generations ago, but writing isn't a lawless landscape. As Emmy Favilla says, we were all born with judgment for a reason. There are plenty of reasons for you to stick around for Midday on Grammar. That's coming right up after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We welcome word nerds near and far. It's grammar time. My guest today is Emmy Jo Favilla. She is the former global copy chief at BuzzFeed. She created the BuzzFeed Style Guide, and in 2017, that became the basis for a terrific book called A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. So a sample of a couple of her trenchant observations. You may not have noticed, for example, why grammar serves as a window into the soul. I certainly didn't. I assumed Facebook and BuzzFeed, for that matter, had enough windows into my soul without examining my relationship with grammar. You may not have asked, as I have not asked, why is the serial comma the cilantro of punctuation marks? Well, Emmy asks these and several other usually unasked questions in her really fun book, and we have now asked her back on the show to talk grammar and vocabulary and usage and all things word. And in a fit of uncharacteristically bad judgment, she has once again accepted our invitation, and she joins us now from the Argo Studios in New York. Hey, Emmy, how you doing?
Hey, Tom. How's it going? Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks for coming back. We appreciate it. And listeners, you can pose your questions about grammar and usage and punctuation and capitalization and anything else word-related. Our number here, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday_WYPR. So, Emmy, first, I want to ask you about your current job title, because they seem to switch quickly. When you wrote your book, you were the copy chief at BuzzFeed. And then when you were on our show, which was November of 2018, you had become the senior commerce editor. Mm-hmm. And now you are the senior manager of brand voice. That seems like a cool thing to be. I have no idea, however, what it means.
it's a pretty cool gig. So right now I am basically managing the copy and research teams who work on editorial and branded content. Our editorial and branded teams have sort of merged under one umbrella. So I oversee the copy and research of both of those teams that are now one. And I also do a couple of other things. I write for BuzzFeed reviews. I write some branded content. And I also advise on projects just to ensure that brand voice is consistent and that things look as they should. So every day is a mixed bag. Not really sure, you know, at the beginning of every day, what the rest of the day is going to look like. And, you know, it's a fun gig. And it does still involve words and grammar and all of that sort of stuff that I was doing in my role as copy chief, because I do work really closely with the copy editors again.
So what is branded content? What does that mean between branded and editorial content, and now that you've merged them?
So basically, editorial content is, you know, up to it's just the standard kind of BuzzFeed content that BuzzFeed became known for. Editorial, just to be clear, the editorial content that the copy and research teams that I manage work on is separate from BuzzFeed News content. That's a totally different division.
Right.
And then branded content is the type of content that is basically sponsored content, content that is created in tandem with clients, you know, that we have relationships with, you know, and it'll say, you know, sponsored post. For instance, Geico is one of our clients, so Geico will sponsor a post, and it'll look very much like an editorial post, but it will be very clear that it's not, you know, that it is something that has been sponsored by a brand.
Right. It's an ad. I mean, it's a
an
way.
Ad. It's an ad. Yeah.
And by the way, did you read Jill Abramson's book? She's the former executive editor of The New York Times. She wrote a book called Merchants of Truth, and BuzzFeed was one of four news organizations that she profiled in it. I wondered if you, just for kicks, had read it and what your thoughts were about it.
I heard a lot about it, but I did not read it.
Yeah, it's worth a read.
It's on my list.
Yeah, because the story of BuzzFeed and how BuzzFeed became the behemoth that it is, because it's really a major player in the internet media space, and this distinction, as you just alluded to, between BuzzFeed News and BuzzFeed. Or the original BuzzFeed, whatever you call it, it's an interesting thing. And she compares BuzzFeed and Vice News to the New York Times and the Washington Post. So it's an interesting read. So let me ask first to calm my fear that I've used an incorrect adjective, because I used an adverb instead of an adjective when I introduced you this morning or this afternoon. I said in a fit of uncharacteristically bad judgment. And when I wrote that, I thought maybe it should be uncharacteristic bad judgment. What is correct?
You know what? I think either one works just fine. And that is a great segue into what the crux of my book is really about. that sometimes there isn't necessarily a black or white answer to what is correct. I think an uncharacteristically.
So I said you had a fit of uncharacteristically bad judgment by accepting our invitation to be on the show, right? So a fit of uncharacteristically bad judgment, does uncharacteristically modify bad or does it modify judgment?
I would hear that and think that it modifies bad judgment as a compound phrase. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it definitely didn't seem wrong to me or
judgment
sound
would be,
the alarms.
Because I'm just one of these old fashioned grammar geeks. So judgment or even bad judgment seems like a noun. Therefore, uncharacteristic would be the adjective modifying the noun, right? But bad, because that in itself is an adjective, has to
be modified by
uncharacteristically, right? So that's how I was thinking. Right. But you're saying, and this is what you say throughout your whole book, if it feels good, do it.
If it feels good, do it. And if it's clear, if no one is, misreading or mishearing what you are, intending to say, as, you just did, it was clear what you were trying to get across. I don't think anyone would have, thought that you were trying to say something else. Then it's totally cool. Stress out about it. Don't sweat.
All right. I feel better already. So one of the fun things in your book is some quizzes, some vocabulary quizzes. So I thought we would put out a few of these for our listeners to see if they want a chance to win fabulous prizes. Now, here's the fabulous prize. If you win, you get to hear the midday vocabulary quiz winning bell. That's it. That is the sum total of the prize that you get. So you can record it. You can tweet it out to all of your friends. So here's our first one. We'll put this out here. And listeners, again, our email, midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle, @middaywipr, and our phone number, 410-662-8780. So here's the first one, pilgarlic. This is a terrific word, and it means one of these four things. It's a multiple choice tests, all right? So you got 1 in 4 chances of getting it right. Pilgarlic, is it A cruciferous vegetable? Pilgarlic, is it B, a jokester? Pilgarlic, is it C, a tool used for carving rocks? And D, pilgarlic, is it a bald-headed man? So pilgarlic, a cruciferous vegetable, a jokester, a tool used for carving rocks, or a bald-headed man. So you can cheat if you want to. That's up to you. That's between you and your God. But don't cheat. Don't Google it. What do you think pilgarlic means? Let us know. 410-662-8780. Email midday@wipr.org. You can send us a tweet @middaywipr. So Let's start, Emmy, you and me, when we talk about some of the stuff in your book here. The serial comma. You refer to it as the cilantro of punctuation. All of that sounds so elegant. But what do you mean, however?
So what I mean is that the serial comma can be a very polarizing, very divisive sort of punctuation mark. So just to be clear, the serial comma, also known as the series comma or the Oxford comma, is the comma that one would use in a series of three or more things that uses the word and or. So the flag is red, white, and blue. So the comma that would appear before the and is the serial comma. And I think that a lot of, I was going to say a lot of people, but I will say I think it's more accurate to say a lot of professional writers and journalists have very strong feelings either for or against the serial comma for whatever reason. It can be seen as a kind of old-fashioned form of punctuation, but I actually think, which is, you know, kind of uncharacteristic because I am admittedly quite progressive in a lot of my grammar and usage and punctuation views. I actually think that the serial comma is great because it makes things clearer more often than it does not. So why not use it? And of course, you know, as a copy editor, you always want to be consistent about the rules that you use. And so at BuzzFeed, we decided early on, back when I started in 2012 as a copy editor, that we would use the serial comma across the board. And, you know, it's not a matter of whether it's wrong or right. It's not wrong or right either way, but it's really just a personal preference. And I think that it works well to lend clarity. So why not use it?
Well, why not indeed? However, what does that have to do with cilantro?
Well, cilantro is also very polarizing herb. It's an herb, right? Not a vegetable. Yeah, it's an herb.
Right.
It's a very polarizing herb. And, you know, you either love it or you despise it. So I thought that it was a pretty fitting analogy.
It's a very good analogy because there are people for some reason and I love cilantro, but
I love cilantro
it
also.
It tastes like soap to some people.
It's so bizarre. I can't even... Yeah. I can't imagine tasting that.
Yeah, yeah. My next door neighbor, because I grow cilantro, I have tons of it. I always try to give her some, and she has no interest in it because it just the sight of it drives her nuts. So it's tough. We got a couple of calls. Let's go to them right now. Let's go to Marianne in Baltimore. Marianne, welcome to Midday with Emmy Favilla.
Well, thank you. This use of like in every other sentence. It just irritates me, and it's odd that people just pick it up because they're hearing it.
It is true. And this is used, so it's like, you know, I mean, it's like people are like always like using like it's all the time. That's a good point, Marianne. So what do you think that is? Is that a verbal tick? I mean, it certainly has nothing to do with grammar. What is it? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a verbal tick that is very closely associated with, you know, a generation that came of age over the past, I want to say maybe two decades or so. I can't think off the top of my head of a similar verbal tick that maybe prior generations have used, but for whatever reason, it is just something that happens when you can't think of the words right away or you need to sort of mentally pause in your head. For me, it's not so much like. Maybe I've just trained myself not to say like. I mean, I'm a millennial, and I feel like millennials get a lot of slack for this sort of stuff. But I might have trained myself not to say like, but I do say stuff like sort of and you know, and I'm trying really hard not to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just a verbal tick that's become more popular for whatever reason over the past.
Not all that long ago, I was riding the T in Boston, and I was listening to a young woman, a millennial, appeared to be a millennial, on the telephone, so I only heard her end of the conversation. And seven times in a row, the only thing she said to the person with whom she was conversing was, I'm like, oh, my God. And then there'd be a 20-second thing. And then, oh, I know. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Also,
I'm like, oh, my God. That's all she said, like, for seven retorts to whatever the other person was saying. I thought, that's incredibly, you know, what an efficient use of the English language. You just pick six words and just hammer them. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I will say, though, like, it used in that sense as sort of a synonym for I thought or I said. That's also, I think that is a different use of like than it is when simply used as a verbal tic.
Yep. That's true. That's a good point. We have a guy on the phone, Michael in Catonsville. I understand that you would like to take a stab at the word of the day. The word of the day, pill garlic. So, Michael, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. So, Michael, is pill garlic a cruciferous vegetable, a jokester, a tool for used for carving rocks, or a bald-headed man?
Aha. And am I the first one to guess on this?
You are, sir, the first one. So, Michael, your guess is?
I'll go with the cruciferous, whatever it was, vegetable.
A cruciferous vegetable. Michael, I'm so sorry. That is not correct. That is not what pill garlic means. It was a bold choice, however, a bold choice, and we all appreciate it. So thanks for the call, but the prize is still out there to be won. The word pill garlic, is it a cruciferous vegetable, a jokester, a tool used for carving rocks, or a bald-headed man? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, maybe we'll get somebody who is smart enough or lucky enough to get it. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Emmy Favilla is my guest. She's the author of a really terrific book, A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. So before we take a break, again, pill garlic. Register your guests. 410-662-8780. Email midday at WIPR.org. Our Twitter handle at midday WIPR. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, we'll spend the hour with Baltimore City Council President Brandon Scott. Last week, he released a legislative and policy proposal which outlines his agenda for the City Council through 2020. One of his ideas is to allow 16-year-olds to vote in city elections. So what do you think about that? We'll talk about it and other issues that affect Baltimore. That's coming up tomorrow when City Council President Brandon Scott joins me here on Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is Emmy Favilla. She's the author of the book, A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. It was published a couple of years ago when she was the global copy chief at BuzzFeed. She's now the senior manager of Brand Voice at BuzzFeed. Regardless of the brand of your voice, you are welcome to be part of our conversation. 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org, our Twitter handle at midday WIPR. Again, our vocabulary quiz is out there. The word is pill garlic. Is it a cruciferous vegetable, a jokester, a tool used for carving rocks, or a bald-headed man? You can register your guess at 410-662-8780. Emmy, let's go back to the phones, if you don't mind, to Tim in Waverly. Tim, welcome to Midday.
Hi. For all of my run-on, unfocused, squirrel chasing, those were all commas, sentences that run off into tangents, I am tortured, if you know where I'm coming from, if you know where I'm getting to, is the ending a sentence with a preposition.
So you don't like to end prepositions sentences with prepositions.
We do it all the time, and if you try to avoid it, you wind up with this long run-on serial comma sentence.
All right.
And the commas probably don't belong there, and I love commas. They are not cilantro. Same aldehyde as a stink bug.
All right. So, Emmy, what do you think? Ending a sentence with a preposition, is that something up with which you will not put?
That is something up with which I will not put. No. Ending a sentence with a preposition is A-OK, and, you know, that question that you just posed is the perfect example of why there is nothing wrong with it, because often the alternative is a very clunkily, awkwardly worded sentence, from Where are you from? From where are you? You know, there's nothing wrong with it. And I think that it's just one of those old grammar rules that were, you know, that was drilled into our heads in, you know, maybe elementary school or whenever. I kind of feel like people are getting a little, are warming up a little more to the idea that it's totally okay, which is great. But yeah, you know, nothing wrong with it because it makes for a smoother worded sentence. There's nothing wrong with it.
Clarity matters. Yeah, absolutely. We have another couple of tries for word of the day. Let's see if Joey can score. Joey, welcome to Midday. What's your guess on pill garlic?
Hey there. So I'm pretty sure I happen to know that this is a bald-headed man, much like myself.
Joey, you are exactly right. We have a winner. Joey, congratulations. There was your prize. Gosh,
all right.
How are you feeling now? So this is a Dear Diary day for you, Joey. That's terrific. So now, Emmy, is pill garlic a noun? I mean, is Joey a pill garlic? Or is Joey's mane pill garlic?
Oh, wow. You really put me on the spot here because I've never used this word in my life ever. I just put it in my vocabulary quiz that
right.
that I repurposed into a quiz in my book. I'm actually not sure. That's a good question.
Joey, do you happen to know? You seem to know everything else. So I'm asking you.
I'm not 100% certain. I would guess a noun, by the way, is a person that used it the one time that I knew.
So you did. You actually encountered it in the known world. Good for you.
Someone called me one when I returned home from the Army with my head shaved bald for the first time.
And they said you were a pill garlic, huh? Interesting.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, Joey, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, man. This is a dream come true.
There you go.
Thank you for your service.
Yes, thank you for your service. And Joey, by the way, you need to work on your dream life. All right, well, let's go to another caller, Christina in Ashburn. Now, Christina, you were going to try pill garlic. Can I give you another one instead?
Okay,
you ready? Are you feeling confident? You feeling good?
I'm feeling all right.
There you go. All right, here's one for you. Bum fuzzle. Bum fuzzle. Is bum fuzzle A, cluster of honeybees, B, the act of tripping and falling, C, to confuse or fluster, or D, to flourish or grow? Bum fuzzle. A cluster of honeybees, the act of tripping or falling, to confuse or fluster, or to flourish or grow. What do you think, Christina?
I'm going to go with C.
To confuse or fluster. Bum fuzzle. Christina? You are right.
Hey.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well done. Well done. By the way, do you happen to have a PhD in English from Harvard?
I do not.
You do not. I understand they can be purchased. So, you know, in case.
No, I'm a dietitian. I don't know if that helps.
Okay. Well, I'm sure being a dietitian does help the world in general. So, Christina, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And we have another, I guess Aunt Google called and said pill garlic is a noun. So now we have solved two major problems of the world. So listeners, let's do one more, or maybe we'll get time for a couple more. This is a good one. Emmy, you put this in your vocabulary because mumpsimus.
Mm.
Do you have their book with you, Emmy?
I do.
You do? On page 365. Do you want to give us what the choices for mumpsimus are? This is another vocabulary word from A World Without Whom, Emmy Favilla's terrific book.
All right, mumpsimus, is it one who steals things that are not very valuable? Is it a notion that is held even though it's unreasonable? Is it talk that is not important or meaningful? Or is mumpsimus the dead body of someone who has voluntarily donated an organ?
Excellent choices. All of them seem to be plausible to me. All right, so that's the new one, listeners. Mumpsimus, one who steals things that aren't very valuable, a notion that's held even though it's unreasonable, talk that's not important or meaningful, or the dead body of someone who has voluntarily donated an organ. You write in your book very poetically that grammar can be a window into the soul. I mean, this is you know, I felt like I should get into the lotus position to read that chapter. So tell me, why is grammar a window into our souls?
Well, I think it's really the approach toward grammar that can maybe be associated with a greater truth about a person. I think what you might be referring to in my book is I mention this study that was done that showed that people who were more incensed by typos or grammatical errors in, I believe it was ads for housing. They did this whole study and they showed, don't ask me how they did this research or how they, you know, what criteria they had for this, but it showed that people who were more sensitive or angered by typos and what they called grammos or, you know, grammatical errors or misusage of certain words or what have you, were less agreeable. and I think that actually there's some validity there behind that just sort of being, you know, a kind of funny, entertaining type of study. The idea that maybe you are, you know, less amenable to change and to considering others' thoughts and opinions is actually something that I think, you know, does hold some validity there. The idea that language is evolving and maybe these grammatical rules that you've had drilled in your head for, you know, for basically forever aren't actually the end-all be-all of, you know, of grammatical correctness. And I think that being more open to, you know, to understanding how language is changing and how common usage is changing could be a reflection of your general
countenance.
Kind of,
yeah, interesting. Well, I'm sold. That argument that argument works for me. I mean, I go nuts with grammos and typos, particularly when I commit them, which I do all the time as a
talk show
host. You know, and I am a grumpy, grumpy person. But you know, it's interesting. So I'm glad that I'm easily identified as such. Now we have this is an age old dilemma here, Emmy. So this is an email from a listener named Mary, who wants to know, why do folk find it so difficult to use the intransitive verb to lie, as in to lie down, and the transitive verb to lay, to put something down on a surface in all their various tenses? The one that you refer to in the book is the phrase, I'm going to lay low for a while.
Man, I wish I had an answer for that question, because I ask that all the time. It is probably still the most common error that I come across, you know, when I'm reading things to be edited, and it's tough. You know, I think it's just so ingrained in us, because in casual conversation, for whatever reason, we often tend to say something like, "I'm going to lay down," when the correct word there would be, "I'm going to lie down." And you know how this evolved into incorrect usage in casual conversation, not sure, but I think that, you know, that tends to, people tend to think that that is the correct usage of the verb, and there we go, you know, and I make the argument in my book that maybe in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, everyone will be tired of fighting this fight and just agree to use lay as both the transitive and intransitive form. You know, and then the past tense of each of those verbs is also what throws people off, because saying I lay down yesterday just seems sort of unnatural and a little wooden, and it's not something that that you really hear often, even though, again, that is the correct usage of that verb. It's just not the way that we tend to use it in casual conversation. And I could see that verb sort of shifting and becoming correct, becoming an acceptable form in some years' time. So
if you are, as I once was, in the Witness Protection Program, only kidding, not actually around, but if I were to be in the Witness Protection Program, would I be laying low or lying low according to the sort of the ancient rules of the grammar gods?
You should be lying low.
Lying low, right? Because lying means you lie down, and to lay something, you lay
you
a book.
Something
you place
something on another
it on
thing.
The, on the thing, right?
Right.
Okay. All right, so now I'm glad we've solved that. I think the world will be a much better place. Let's go back to the phones to Josh. Josh in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Emmy Favilla.
Thanks for taking my call. Comment on the serial comma. My mother was an editor who loathed the serial comma, although I use it all the time. Maybe that's my act of defiance and posthumous act of defiance. But there was a lawsuit in either Connecticut or New Hampshire recently that turned on the absence of the serial comma and the clarity that you were talking about earlier. Because the serial comma was missing, the person challenging the lawsuit, challenging the law, won a bunch of money because it was unclear. Just a fun fact, what's your thought on the split infinitive and whether to use it or not?
Oh, excellent. Ooh. Excellent question.
Yes, and I did read about that lawsuit, and I thought it was a win for serial comma enthusiasts. Split infinitive. You know, that's another one where I think that unless it leads to a sort of phrasing that just sounds unnatural or awkward, what's the big deal, you know?
Right. No one dies. Right.
To boldly go, to go boldly, where no man has gone before, you know, either one, we know what you're getting at. And I think that there are bigger issues that we should be spending our time being
there probably are. In New Hampshire, you know, the motto of the state is live free or die. And if they're actually, you know, winning lawsuits based on the placement of a comma, you got to wonder, you know, get a life, live free or die. And then when you are living, get a life. Josh, did you want to take a stab at the word of the day, the mumpsimus?
Oh, I hadn't. Give me the choices again, please.
All right. Emmy, you want to give Josh the choices for mumpsimus?
All right. Mumpsimus. So is it A, one who steals things that are not very valuable? B, a notion that is held even though it's unreasonable? C, talk that is not important or meaningful? Or D, the dead body of someone who has voluntarily donated an organ?
I'm going to go with C as in Charlie.
Talk that is not important or meaningful. That's how our director and engineer describes our program every day. But unfortunately, Josh, that is not the answer. That is not the answer. But fear not. We have set up a hotline, 1-800-I'm-sorry-I-lost. You can call and you'll have counseling available to you 24/7.
I appreciate that.
All right.
Thank
well, Josh,
so
thank
much.
You very much for the call. I really appreciate it. So mumpsimus, one who steals things that aren't very valuable, a notion that is held even though it's unreasonable, talk that's not important or meaningful, and the dead body of someone who's voluntarily donated an organ. So far, we don't have a winner for mumpsimus, but we do have an email from Richard, Emmy, who says, how does your guest feel about the proliferation, particularly in television advertising, of the word way in place of much, as in way more, way bigger, way brighter? Does she think that eventually this will be considered acceptable English usage?
I mean, I think that it's already acceptable English usage. You know, if we are already hearing it and we're already complaining about it, then we've sort of lost the battle, you know? And way is used as a synonym for a lot or much or just a large quantity of something or high volume of something. And I think it has been for quite a while. I know that it kind of evolved from more slangy usage, you know, saying like, yeah, that's way cool, to being used in everyday English. And I would say that we're already there. Sorry.
What was the movie, the two kids with the cable show on Aurora cable, Wayne's World.
Wayne's World?
Because
right?
I think they that was a big pivotal moment in my life when someone's, mm-hmm. I think Wayne said to Garth, no way. And Garth said, way, using it in the positive. I thought that was an excellent moment. And so I think Richard Emmy is definitely right. I think it's already there. We're talking grammar and vocabulary and language with Emmy Favilla, the author of the book A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. When we come back after a quick break, we'll take more of your calls and comments, and hopefully we will find, or perhaps in the hopes of finding a winner for Mumpsimus, our current word of the day. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Emmy Favilla is my guest for the hour. She's the author of A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. She is the senior manager of Brand Voice at BuzzFeed. She has wrestled with serial commas and em-dashes, how to properly spell the term email, and other issues of global import since 2012. So here's my unsolicited advice. You should read Emmy's book, and you should take part in our vocabulary quiz. The word that's out there now is mumpsimus. And I'll give you a hint. People on both sides of the political argument would find this helpful. Mumpsimus, is it one who steals things that are very valuable? Is it a notion that is held even though it's unreasonable? Is it talk that is not important or meaningful? Or is the dead body of someone who has voluntarily donated an organ? So, Emmy, we have an email from Peggy who says, less versus fewer. It's kind of like over versus more. You know, mm-hmm. If I said Emmy Favilla has been at BuzzFeed for over 8 years, I would flagellate myself because you have been there for more than 8 years. And I'm a stickler about that one, but you don't care so much about that. How about less and fewer?
Yeah, you know, I don't care so much about the over versus more situation, but less versus fewer is, that's one of those pairs of words that I am a little bit of a stickler about using correctly. So fewer you would use when you are talking about something that is quantifiable, you know, a specific number of things. There were fewer apples in this basket than in that one. There were fewer people at her party than at his party. And then when we're talking about mass nouns or more kind of, you know, abstract ideas, we would use less. So let's say there was less of a risk of XYZ than whatever. When we're talking about things that can actually be counted, you always want to use fewer. And don't ask me why. I'm a big stickler about it. I think that it just sounds so wrong to say, you know, there were less apples here than there were here.
Yeah, once again, another insight into the window of Emmy Favilla's soul right there. This is what she cares about. This is stuff you're losing sleep about, Emmy. It's
sure
pretty,
is.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's
all right,
tough
so we,
life.
So we have another contestant willing to step up and tell us what mumpsimus means. Let's go to George in Glen Burnie. George, welcome to Midday.
How you doing?
Doing great. So what do you think? What does mumpsimus mean?
Well, I'm assuming, or I'm taking my educated guess, that it's going to be the second one, which is more of an action word. And with the ending in O-U-S, I wouldn't think it would be a noun.
Oh, well, that's a really interesting way of approaching the problem. It actually ends in U-S. It's mump,
U-S.
Like
okay.
Mumps, like the disease, and then I-M-U-S. And you are exactly right. It is indeed a notion that is held even though it's unreasonable. And, George, you are in a tie for Daniel because Daniel on email said the same thing. So this one, you got to split with Daniel. You ready, George?
Okay.
There it is.
All right.
The prize of the day. Congratulations, yeah. George. Thank you very much. Let's go to Alice in Columbia. Alice, welcome to Midday with Emmy Favilla.
Hello. I am also bothered by less and the difference between less and fewer and more and many, as in there are how much people show up for this event. It drives me up the wall. But I also have a question about plural possessives. If somebody is a friend of both mine and my brother, do I say he's a friend of mine and my brother's? Do I say Ted and John's friend or Ted's and John's friend?
Oh, good. So if you're plural possessives, yeah, interesting. What do you think, Em?
So basically, yes, you would say that he is a friend of mine and my brother's, which makes it clear that he is a friend of both of you.
Not mine's and my brother's.
Not my, right. Mm-hmm. And then if two people or two whatever we're two nouns, whatever we're referring to, share possession of the thing that is being possessed, you need only to add the possessive, apostrophe S after the second person's name. So, for instance, let's say there were a couple who shared a car, and we said, John and David's car. That makes it clear that that car belongs to the both of them, and you only need to add that apostrophe S after David's name. If we were talking about two people with two separate cars, then we would say John's and David's cars, and that would be clear that we're referring to two distinct cars.
Yeah. So thanks, Alice. That's terrific. Great question. And there's a rule for that. Emmy, let's try to do one more vocabulary word.
All right.
How about the second one on page 365? And I don't know whether I'm pronouncing this right. I should have looked it up, and I just forgot. Calipygian or Calipygian? Do you know how it's pronounced?
I am going to guess Calipygian. So let's just go with that and hope that's right.
All right, so Calipygian. So give us our choices for Calipygian, our new word of the day.
All right, Calipygian. So is it A, having a shapely booty, B, a person who has beautiful handwriting, C, a person who has big eyes, or D, one with extensive knowledge of firearms?
Oh, very good. Calipygian. That seems like a word you would have all sorts of occasions to use, if you wanted to compliment people on all sorts of things. A, having a shapely booty, a person who has beautiful handwriting, a person who has big eyes, or one who has an extensive knowledge of firearms. Calipygian is the word. So one question that I have for you, Emmy, is quotation marks. Does the punctuation go inside or outside the punctuation mark?
Well, here in America, we put the punctuation on the inside of a quotation mark if the punctuation is a comma or a period. If we're dealing with a colon after a piece of quoted material or a semicolon, then it would go outside the end quotation. But in the UK and in Australia, they would put the period or the comma on the outside. So that's something that I had to learn when I lived in London for a year and I was looking for copy editing jobs. I had to familiarize myself with a slightly different set of punctuation and, of course, spelling rules when I was searching for a gig there.
Yeah. And so, like, for example, the title of your book, A World Without Whom, and the word mm-hmm. whom has quotation marks around it.
Right.
Colon, the essential guide to language in the BuzzFeed age. The colon goes outside the quotation mark around the word whom.
Correct.
All right. There you go. It's good to know. Let's go to Dan in Baltimore. Dan, welcome to Midday with Emmy Favilla.
Hi. I was just remembering that when our president used the form about the four congresswomen who he said should return to from whence they came. And I thought, that doesn't seem like any sort of wording that he would even be aware of. So it made me wonder whether he actually wrote that phrase.
All right. So and grammatically then, Emmy, what should it be?
Grammatically, from whence? I've never even heard anyone in, our current century use the word from whence. So I would say from where they came.
Yeah. Now, would you have to say from where they came from, which would put you in a position of ending a sentence with a preposition?
Well, if you said from where they came.
Oh, from where they came. So you put the from
first.
Yeah,
or just where they came from, which is probably closer to how we all speak in everyday conversation.
Whence they came. Interesting. Lauren in Lutherville, welcome to Midday with Emmy Favilla.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I have a grammar pet peeve, and I'd love to get your opinion. When people use the word I instead of me, when me is correct, for example, will you go to the movies with Danny and I? And the reason it bugs me is because I feel like it's a kind of overcorrecting. Like they think they're on purpose using correct grammar.
But that's actually
because
incorrect.
Because I should be better than me somehow.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it should actually be me. I do feel like people have a tendency to try to be hypercorrect in those situations. And they think that I is just always the correct form. But in that situation, right, it would be, do you want to come to the movies with me and whoever else?
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Lauren. So we have
also a pet peeve.
Yeah, pet peeve of mine as well. Steve sends us an email. I'm a tail end baby boomer who was taught that possessives for words ending in S did not require apostrophe S. So S's now seem to be the standard. When and how did that happen? Who makes these decisions that become universal? English is an amazing language. We get on an airplane from a building called Terminal. That's a really great observation, Steve. So what do you think? When you're making possessives for words that end in S, do you put the apostrophe after the S or do you put an extra S in apostrophe?
Yeah, this is another question that I think has a lot to do with personal preference or the prevailing style at a publication. Again, I don't think either one is necessarily right versus wrong. At BuzzFeed, we have a sort of strange rule, I want to say, where if we're using a proper noun, a person's name, and it ends in an S sound, we would use just an apostrophe. But if it ends in a Z sound, we would add an apostrophe S.
It's an interesting way to parse it. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's sort of how you would actually pronounce it. But then we run into the issue of maybe not everyone pronounces a word that ends in S but sounds like a Z sound, you know, the same. But really, you know, it's a matter of personal preference. And I would say if you are actually writing for a professional publication, just stick with one. And, of course, if we are creating the possessive form of a plural word with, let's say the app. I don't know why I have apples on the brain. The apples sheen, we would, of course, just use the apostrophe after S because whenever you create the possessive form of a plural word, you just only need the apostrophe.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've got a couple of stabs at the word of the day. Let's go first to Tina in Baltimore. Tina, what does Callipygian mean?
It means having a shapely bottom.
All right. That's a great guess, and I'm going to tell you whether that's right or not when we go to Tom in Annapolis. Tom, what do you think? What does Callipygian mean?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I sailed on a sailboat that was named Callipygian, and it had a very uncomfortable railing to sit on, and that's why it was named Callipygian.
And you are both right, Tina and Tom. Callipygian indeed means having a shapely booty. Thank you both very much for calling. Thanks to everybody who checked in. And Emmy Favilla, thank you as well. It's always fun to talk to you. The book is terrific. It's called A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. Have a great rest of the summer. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, my guest for the hour is Baltimore City Council President Brandon Scott. We'll talk about his legislative and policy proposals, his thoughts on how to curb the epidemic of violence in our city, how Baltimore is recovering from the ransomware attack, and other issues on everybody's mind. That's coming up tomorrow. City Council President Brandon Scott, he's with me here on Midday. Special thanks to Well Crafted Kitchen for our delicious lunch today. Well Crafted Kitchen, located within the tap room at Union Craft Brewing, has a mission of celebrating community through a shared local food experience, sourcing ingredients from their favorite Baltimore area makers and producers. Well Crafted serves seasonally inspired wood-fired pizzas and eats. You can join them for a shared meal at 1700 West 41st Street, or let them fire up your next celebration with their 1949 Dodge Mobile Pizza Kitchen. Stay tuned. Here and Now is coming up next after the NPR newscast at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.